Welcome to the Survivorship Child Abuse and Ritual Abuse Conference in Oakland, California, 2014. And our presenter today is Nick Bryant. I'm sure he's well known, you've heard his name around. He's the author of The Franklin Scandal, which is the culmination of a 7-year investigation into the cover-up of an interstate child trafficking network. His writing has recurrently focused on the plight of disadvantaged children in the United States. He's been published in numerous national journals, including the Journal of Professional Ethics, the Journal of Applied Developmental Psychology, the Journal of Social Distress and Homelessness, the Journal of Healthcare for the Poor and Underserved, and Journal of School Health. He's the co-author of America's Children, Triumph or Tragedy, Addressing the Medical and Developmental Problems of Lower Socioeconomic Children in America. And his talk today, The Franklin Scandal. Thanks.
Hi everybody, I'm glad to be here, and I want to thank Survivorship for asking me to come today. And we're talking about the Franklin Scandal, which was a 7-year investigation of mine into a child trafficking network. And as far as I know, it's really the only book that really documents a transcontinental pedophile network in the United States, and also the cover-up of a transcontinental pedophile network in the United States. And if there are survivors in the audience, I'm sure that some of them might be able to identify with this, but this pedophile network was in operation for about 10 years, flying children from coast to coast. And ultimately, state and federal law enforcement concluded that there was no children abused by this network. And so there were scores of children that were destroyed by this network. And according to state law enforcement, this network never existed. And the Franklin Scandal begins with Lawrence E. King of Omaha, Nebraska. And this is the, and it gets set up from the Franklin Credit Union, which was a credit union for lower socioeconomic people in Omaha, Nebraska. And Larry was quite a high flyer. This is him singing the national anthem at the Republican convention, photographed by Associated Press. He was a very good singer, kind of a less than desirable human being, but he had a very good voice. And Larry lived large. He was in the upper echelon of the Republican Party. And this is a article that was written by Metropolitan Magazine. It talks about Larry's connections. He threw a party at the 1988 GOP convention. And the part that I've excerpted said the host committee included Gerald Ford, Senator John McCain, and Jack Kemp, and Al Haig, to name a few. So Larry was flying amongst the upper echelon of the American political strata. And the first case of King-related abuse came from the Webb household. This is a document from the Department of Social Services of Nebraska, and I think it's kind of tough to see, but in this, the Webb household had 8 children living in it. 5 were adopted and 3 foster children, and they were very, very vicious to these kids. 5 of them ended up running away, and then there were repeated allegations of physical abuse, and they were struck for long periods of time while naked by a belt, a rubber hose. Okay, now this document came out after 5 of the kids had been removed from the house. So 5 kids had been removed from the house, and still there were other kids in this house. And then number 3 is the oldest girl in the house. Her name was Lisa. She went to a foster care home, and she told her foster care mother that she'd been flown around, that she'd been sexually abused by Gerald Webb, the husband, and that she'd been flown around to pedophilic orgies in Chicago and also in New York, and said that Larry King flew her around, and she named a very high-ranking politician that she saw at one of these pedophile parties. So her foster mother was beside herself. There was all this documentation of abuse in the Webb household. I mean, I've got stacks of social services documents about abuse. Lisa passed a polygraph that was administered by the Nebraska State Patrol, which is the state police of Nebraska, and nothing happened. Nothing. The Webbs were charged with child abuse. Larry Kane was in charge with child abuse. No one was charged with child abuse, and there were still two adopted kids still living in this home after all these allegations came out. So, Julie Walters had a friend at Boys Town because Lisa Washington had said that Boys Town kids were on these flights with her, and so. She had she went to a friend at Boys Town, and Julie Walters handed a report. Lisa, she interviewed Lisa, and Lisa gave her just all the allegations of sexual abuse and being thrown around by Larry King, and named the Boys Town kids that were part of this pedophile network. Now, this was. This was in 1986, and about this time, a social worker knew that something was wrong in the Webb household, and she started to dig into the Webb household, and I got this from a state investigator. This is an excerpt from a state investigator, and what happened to her was, the last sentence is, the FBI, her name was Joni Gregory. The FBI talked to Joni Gregory and probably said it would be, quote-unquote, in her best interest to forgive this information. So, ultimately, you have the police and not taking action. Then you've got the FBI, you know, a social worker comes and says something's wrong here. And you've got FBI agents threatening her, and she backed away. But Larry King had quite an operation, and he had a photographer named Rusty Nelson. Who would accompany King. There was a lot of blackmail involved with this particular pedophile network. And Rusty Nelson tried to inveigle a young girl into child pornography, and the girl's mother told the police, and the police, the Omaha Police Department, this is centered in Omaha, Nebraska, launched a report. Now, they generated a number of reports on this investigation. I've got all the police reports. I was able to acquire all the sealed documents from two grand juries and the testimony of one grand jury. So, and it had social service reports, police reports, FBI reports, all kinds of reports. So, so this is the first investigation, and then they continued to investigate. And one of the investigating officers interviewed a woman named Karen Beveridge, and she stated that she heard that Larry King is homosexual and has a preference for young men and boys. Now, they generated about five reports, and then all of a sudden their reports just stopped. And there's no internal documentation why they stopped, but they just stopped. So, in this case, it's easy to say that the Omaha Police Department is corrupt, but there was one officer who just couldn't let go of this. And the excerpt, this is from an interoffice member from the Omaha Police Department, and he had heard that the police chief was a very good friend of Larry King, and then the police chief, and then he had his memos not sent to where the memos go. He had them typed separately, and he typed them himself, and the police chief found out about it. This is a memo that this officer sent to the chief. During the period of investigation, there were rumors being circulated that Chief Wadman was friends with Larry King and that the chief had stayed with Larry King while in Washington, D.C. Well, this didn't fly very well with the police chief. So this next interoffice memo is the police chief assigning this particular officer, giving him a psychiatric referral. And this is the police chief. This negative information seemed to fall into two areas. Number one, that the Omaha Police Division was aware of these sexual improprieties by Mr. King, did not investigate them. And number two, that due to Mr. King's influence and association with myself, I intentionally hindered the investigation of Larry King. Okay, so, and then after this, another girl comes forward, and she says that I was part of a child pornography ring with Larry King. So she's interviewed once. None of the kids in the Webb household are interviewed. This other investigation is stymied. And ultimately, nothing happened. So these allegations eventually came to the attention of the Foster Care Review Board, which oversees foster care placement in Nebraska, and they were just stunned that none of this had been investigated. So the head of the Foster Care Review Board sent a letter to, this is her letter to the Attorney General of Nebraska. Dear Mr. Spire, pursuant to the Nebraska Child Abuse Statutes, the State Foster Care Review Board is making a report of allegations of child exploitation and respectfully requests an investigation. And what happened then? Nothing. Nothing happened. There weren't, none of these kids were interviewed by the state, by the Attorney General's office. The Attorney General's office investigator would later admit that he never interviewed victims. So you have multiple agencies creating multiple reports of child abuse, and one victim is interviewed once, and that's it. So what happens next in this saga is Larry King, in addition to being a pedophilic pimp, he's also embezzling money from the credit union. So the credit union all of a sudden gets, and he's been able to stave off regulators for 4 years, but the credit union suddenly gets audited. Shortly after George Herbert Walker Bush won the election in 1988, and it comes up $39.5 million short. Now, what happens next is lawmakers form the Franklin Committee to investigate King and the credit union. So apparently, you can molest multiple children, and that's not going to cause any problems, but as soon as you rip off $39.5 million, then, you know, authorities are going to get involved, which is kind of a sad commentary on just the state of where we're at today. So, these people that were affiliated with foster care wouldn't listen. Nobody listened to them. So they went to these senators that formed the Franklin Committee, and they said, child abuse is an integral part of this story. The $39.5 million is just one part of it. Larry King is running the Interstate Pedophile Network. And so the senators form a hearing where these foster care review board members testify. And then all of a sudden it starts to be national press. Here's an article from the New York Times. A lurid, mysterious scandal begins to take shape in Omaha, Nebraska. And then this is a Lincoln Journal article. Okay, Spire, the Attorney General, Wadman denied any lack of action on the child abuse case. Now, considering that one victim had been interviewed once by the Omaha Police Department and the Attorney General's office had never interviewed a victim, I would say that there was a lack of action there. But these are quotes from the article. The Nebraska Attorney General, Robert Spire, we did receive some sensitive information in July. My office acted promptly and professionally, and nothing was said on it. And this is the Omaha Police Chief, Robert Wadman. Every step that should have been taken was taken, okay? So now we have, so they can't, the Franklin Committee's been formed, so they can't really just ignore it anymore. Now they have to start lying. Okay, the Franklin Committee hired an investigator named Gary Caridori, who's one of the best investigators in the United States of America. He had a large firm of it was called Caracol. He had about 120 investigators. But his thing was, I mean, he had a history of finding children enmeshed in drugs and prostitution. That was his thing. So Caridori went to work immediately. He was an amazing investigator. And he was able to acquire 200 flight receipts. And I have all his flight receipts. And most of the planes, these are all rent by Larry King. Now, if you notice, like, by law, you're required to have a passenger manifest, but King was able to avoid that. It's Larry King plus four. So, and all these flight manifests, they just have Larry King plus four, plus five, plus six, plus seven. And a lot of them, most of them go to Washington, D.C., because that's an important element of the story that will come up later. And this is an investigative report of Gary Caridori's. And he talks to a woman who worked at one of the charter services, and she said that Kim would rent planes every week, and she stated that these young males were very good looking, attired in fancy suits, gold chains, and watches and rings. And they were very clean cut and clean shaven. She stated that it was very odd to her that none of these young adults would talk. Okay. So Kiragori's starting to put it together that this is a transcontinental pedophile network. He's got the flight receipts, he's got without the passenger manifests, and he's starting to really bore into this. And then he comes across four additional victims who are willing to be videotaped. Lee Shaw and Troy Bonner, Danny King, and Paul Manassi. And they videotaped them for over 20 hours, and they repeatedly corroborate each other on transcontinental flights, abusers, and they also corroborate Denise Washington and Shanetta Moore, who'd come forward earlier, and some of the other kids, too. And ultimately, he compiled a leads list. His leads list is 37 pages. This is the first page of his leads list. At 37 pages, it has 271 names, and there's approximately 60 victims on it. And Larry King was plundering Boys Town, the distinguished Catholic orphanage outside of Omaha, Nebraska, and there's about 10 Boys Town victims. And it was up to me to find these victims. My investigation was kind of an extension of Garrett Kiragori's investigation. So it was up to me to find these kids that were on this leads list. And they were tough to find because they were molested at a very young age, and if they performed well, they were turned on to drugs. So, and as they got older, they were just expunged, and they were drug addicts. So most of them became felons. And I looked all over. I spent a lot of time in housing projects in certain ghettos. I was actually in a crack house once looking for a victim. The proprietors of the crack house apparently felt like I didn't belong there, so they weren't very receptive to me. But I found the guy the next day in a homeless shelter. So Garrett Kiragori compiles this leads list and then the videotape testimony. And the senators are kind of perplexed because where do we go? I mean, law enforcement hasn't done anything. So what they do is they release the videotapes to law enforcement and then say, look at these kids, they're repeatedly corroborating each other on all these events. So the Attorney General, Spire, says, okay, we're going to give this evidence top priority. We're going to get to the bottom of this. And so a state federal grand jury, or a state grand jury is formed and a federal grand jury is formed. And they bring Samuel Van Pelt out of retirement to prosecute the state grand jury. Now, I don't know if many of you are familiar with the grand jury format, but it's the special prosecutor that chooses. Grand jurors are just, I mean, a grand jury seems like it has some kind of authoritative meaning, like it's come down from Mount Olympus and it's the truth. But that's very far from what grand juries are. Grand jurors are just people that show up for jury duty, and they're ultimately funneled into a grand jury. And with grand jurors, they're just ordinary citizens. And when a special prosecutor is head of a grand jury, he shows the grand jurors evidence that he deems is beneficial. There was a chief appellate judge in New York State who once said that a special prosecutor has so much power over a grand jury that they can get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich. Oh. And what Samuel Van Pelt did was he kept these grand jurors, and I have all the sealed testimony of this grand jury, so I just show how corrupt it was. And I excerpted, which was illegal for me to do, but I felt like it was so corrupt, and the crimes that it covered up were so heinous that I felt like it was incumbent upon me to publish that the grand jury testimony, and I did publish it. It's in the Franklin scandal, and I show that Van Pelt was just calling all kinds of. I mean, he kept those grand jurors there for 5 months, and I don't know if any of you've been on jury duty, but you know, if a jury that lasts 4 months, I mean, people get taken out of their lives, but he kept them there for 5 months, and he just wore them down. I mean, he called, like, a schizophrenic to the stand that had nothing to do with this, who said that the FDA was governed by the KGB, you know, stuff like that. And so these grand jurors over the months just got worn down and worn down. But something interesting happened here. So, well, these grand juries were getting going. Larry King was suddenly found incompetent. He was whisked out of Omaha, Nebraska. He was brought before a U.S. magistrate that found him incompetent, and then a judge found him incompetent. So, and in this next clipping, King's pastor and boss say King seemed at least stable. It's kind of strange that they put him in a psychiatric institution. So, Gary Corrigan is really starting to make things happen. These grand juries are being formed. Larry King's been whisked out of Omaha, Nebraska. They deposited him in a federal psychiatric facility in Rochester, Minnesota. But something happens to Gary Corrigan in this investigation. Alicia Owen told him, and I really can't get into all the malfeasance here, but especially with the FBI because there's so much malfeasance, but Alicia Owen's lawyer told her that if she recanted her abuse and told her that Gary Corrigan gave her scripts and the other kids scripts for these abuse allegations about Larry King, that they would drop, that she was currently in prison with Owen, and for writing bad checks. She was given a 3 to 4 year sentence for writing $785 worth of bad checks. So ultimately, Gary Corrigan realizes that he's no longer the hunter, he's the hunted. And this is an excerpt from, he wrote a letter to the famous attorney, Jerry Spence. And this is a quote from the letter. I and my staff have been followed. Our telephones, both business and personal, are being monitored. And recently, all the lug nuts of a vehicle that I've been driving were loosened. In short, what we have discovered is only a small part of a nationwide child exploitation network. It is obvious that the people behind this organization are powerful and ruthless and are going to great lengths to keep this matter contained. So, once Gary Corrigan became the hunted, he realized that that his career and the welfare of his family depended on him getting some smoking gun evidence. He realized what the FBI and the grand juries were doing to these kids. The FBI was putting pressure on these kids to recant their abuse. And now, he ultimately went to Chicago, and this is Rusty Nelson. He came up in the earlier Omaha Police Department investigation that I showed you. This is Rusty. He was a photographer for King. He took part in filming child pornography, taking pictures of child pornography, and he was also a blackmail photographer because a lot of the people that were involved, the powerful people that were involved in this network, were blackmail. And I'll get into that a little bit more. But I have 5 corroborations that Rusty Nelson gave pictures to Gary Corrigan. Gary Corrigan was a private pilot. He flew to Chicago. He got pictures of these pedophilic orgies from Rusty Nelson. And Rusty Nelson told me this. Sandy Corrigan told me this. Donna Owen, who doesn't, she comes in a little bit later. Lauren Schmidt, chairman of the Franklin Committee, knew that Corrigan had acquired pictures, and also a reporter in Washington, D.C., who was following this because it has a D.C. side to it, which I'll get in later. So Gary Corrigan, according to 5 sources, got pictures that would just blow this wide open. And once the dominoes started falling on this, they would have fallen from Omaha, they would have fallen all the way to Washington, D.C. So what Gary acquired was like plutonium. I mean, what he acquired was very, very dangerous. And he didn't make it back to Nebraska. When he was flying back to Nebraska, his plane just mysteriously broke up in midair. The National Transportation Safety Board wasn't able to provide an explanation of why his plane broke up in midair, but they just said his plane broke up in midair. And planes generally don't break up in midair. So, and ultimately, Gary Corrigan's death was an accident, that his plane just mysteriously broke up in midair. Now, the pictures were gone. Actually, everything that was in that plane was rifled through. And there's a lot of malfeasance with this part of the story, but I really can't get into it. The Franklin scandal is a big book, but I bring in all the anomalies that are involved with his death and also the investigation of his death. So 2 weeks after Yuri Caradori dies, the state grand jury comes out with a 43-page report. It was like Moses had come down from Mount Sinai with the tablets, because the national media was looking into this, the local media was looking into this, and everybody wanted answers from Samuel Van Pelt about what really happened. And what really happened, according to Samuel Van Pelt, was that this pedophile network was a carefully crafted hoax. Now, the grand jury report didn't name who carefully crafted the hoax. It's a very strange document, and I really take it apart. I dismantle it in the Franklin scandal. But then the national media says it's all a carefully crafted hoax. And now there were two kids, which is pretty amazing, that wouldn't recant their abuse. The FBI came in, and they got all these kids to recant their abuse, but there were two kids that wouldn't recant their abuse. One was Alicia Owen, and she was indicted on 8 counts of perjury regarding her statements about being molested by OPD Chief Robert Wadman, Judge Theodore Carlson, and witnessing then Omaha World Herald publisher molesting a child. And Paul Benassi was indicted on 3 counts of perjury regarding his statements about being molested by Harold Anderson, the Omaha World Herald publisher, and witnessing Alicia Owen being molested by OPD Chief Wadman. So, and each count of perjury carries a maximum of 20 years. So Alicia was looking, for not recanting her abuse, Alicia Owen was looking at 160 years in prison. And Paul Benassi was merely looking at 60 for not recanting his abuse. So, and the kids, the FBI told the kids, if you go on with this story, we're going to take you down for perjury. So this was a telltale sign to all the other kids that were involved. Because the FBI had roughed them up, and they said, you know, if you go on with this, we're taking you down for perjury. So after the grand jury came out, this is an editorial in the Omaha World Herald. The Franklin Committee, a disgrace to Nebraska. I mean, how did the World Herald really feel about the Franklin Committee? The Omaha World Herald attacks the Franklin Committee. Now, the New York Times trumpets the carefully crafted hoax. The Washington Post trumpets the federal grand jury that also says that there's no child abuse. GQ magazine perpetrates a hatchet job on the Franklin Committee and the victims. And then CBS gets involved with this and says that perpetrates a hatchet job on the Franklin Committee and also the victims. And so now you've got the state media and the national media getting involved in this, in this cover-up. And Alicia is awaiting her trial, and her brother is found dead. And one of the other kids who was having a hard time recanting, but ultimately did, his brother shot himself in the head. Mm-hmm. So that kind of sets the stage for the state versus Lee Jones. This is Alicia being walked to her being perp walked from a jail to the courtroom. Now, Alicia's trial, she was looking at 160 years of perjury. It was the longest criminal trial in the Nebraska history. And Alicia's guilt is necessary to sanctify both state and federal grand juries that declared that there was no Larry King-related child abuse. Because both these grand juries had said, okay, there's no abuse, and they indicted Alicia. Both of them indicted Alicia for perjury. So, in order for those grand juries to be sanctified, Alicia has to be found guilty. And Alicia's trial wended for weeks. And as I said, it was the longest criminal trial in the history of Nebraska. Now, the examples of corruption and malfeasance at her trial are just too numerous to imagine. I mean, her trial is the biggest chapter in the book. But, well, and her jury was deadlocked for 3 days about whether or not she was guilty. And but while her jury was deliberating whether or not she was guilty, on the first full day of the jury's deliberations, CBS 48 Hours broadcast an episode entitled Accusing Prominent People of Sex Crimes. And one segment has Troy Bonner, one of the kids that came forward who was a friend of Alicia, and former OPD chief Robert Wadman, and a prominent Omaha attorney trash Alicia Owens' credibility and makes repeated references to the grand juries. The 48 Hours reporter even admits he is cognizant of the fact that the episode is being broadcast while Alicia's trial is occurring. So you've got a kid that was indicted when she was 21 years old, and now you've got CBS and Dan Rather skewering her while her jury is in deliberations. Now, here's a couple of jury affidavits that I've collected, and actually three. And I'll give you an excerpt from a couple of them. The 48 Hours program was the main topic of discussion while they were deliberating. Particular attention was centered on Chief Wadman's discussions. It is not clear to me it is clear to me, my glasses are, I'm kind of, it's a distance, it's not conducive to my glasses. It is clear to me, thank you very much, by the way, it is clear to me that this impacted every juror who watched it. I am providing this information because I believe a terrible injustice has been done to Ms. Owen. And then another juror affidavit said, evidence which the jurors knew and believed had been introduced in the trial was denied the jurors' review, and evidence which had never apparently been introduced was mysteriously provided to the jurors. Because there was a carefully crafted hoax letter that was planted in the jury room that all the jurors, that was never introduced. I mean, so ultimately, Alicia Owen is found guilty on all counts. And she put up a noble fight. I mean, and here's a kid that has been molested since she was 14. I mean, the worst kind of abuse possible. What happened to her. And she stood up to the FBI. She stood up to the Department of Justice. She stood up to everybody. She went to court on this. And now once she's sentenced to 9 to 15 years in prison. And to be spiteful, they put her in solitary for 2 years. I mean, we're talking a kid now in solitary for 2 years. Now, the state just barely got Alicia Owen. Just barely got her. So after she is found guilty, the perjury charges against Paul Benassi are immediately dropped. Because if they couldn't get Paul, because they were indicted basically on the same statements regarding Wadman and Harold Anderson, Chief Wadman and Omaha Herald publisher Anderson. If Paul Benassi managed to beat or was exonerated, then Alicia's conviction would have been called into question. So they just couldn't, they just couldn't risk it. And so ultimately, there was a very good-hearted attorney in Omaha who saw these incredible injustices with Alicia Owen's trial. And he launched a number of appeals. And now he got one kid to come forward who had recanted his abuse. His name was Troy Bonner. And Troy submits a liar die affidavit. And shortly after Alicia's brother was found dead, Troy's brother shot himself in the head. And Troy was wavering on whether or not he was going to testify at Alicia Owen's trial. And this is an excerpt from his affidavit. I and my mother and my family are exhausted from living in fear of death or injury as a result of my personal involvement in the Franklin matters, which ended up in my testimony at the grand jury hearings, as well as at the Alicia Owen trial. I lied at the grand jury hearings, and I lied at the Alicia Owen trial. I lied when I recanted my original statement to Caridori. I lied because I truly believed, and still do believe, that it was a situation where I must either lie or die, and at the insistence primarily of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. So, now this gives Alicia some hope, because Troy is coming forward and saying, I lied. So she gets a hearing, and where Troy is going to say that I lied and I was pressured by the FBI, and and Alicia's very excited about that, and her family's very excited about that. You know, this is finally going to, she's finally going to get justice. So she gets this appellate hearing, and as Alicia Owen's parents, Troy Bonner, and Owen's appellate attorney walk through the Douglas County Courthouse, it's right, the Douglas County Court is right in downtown Omaha, where the hearing was being held, Troy Bonner was snatched right in the middle of the Douglas County Courthouse. I mean, he was grabbed by, I think, Nebraska State Patrol, but I'm not exactly sure. And he was taken into a room, and the prosecutor, who was prosecuting Alicia Owens' case, started screaming at him. And he emerged from the room, and he, a terrified Bonner eventually emerged from the room, and he point-blank told Owens' appellate attorney that he would invoke the Fifth Amendment when called to testify at Alicia Owens' trial. So that was that. And Alicia had to do 4.5 years in prison over that, which she did, and now she's a model citizen. Alicia is really an amazing woman. And now what happened in this, and what's kind of fascinating, is you see the upward mobility of the people that helped cover this up. U.S. Magistrate Richard Koff, who deposited Larry King in the mental institution so he wouldn't be around when the grand juries were in progress and he wouldn't be called before the grand juries. He's now a U.S. District Court judge. Thomas Tolkien, the assistant U.S. attorney for the District of Nebraska, who prosecuted the corrupt federal grand jury that said there was no child abuse, is now a U.S. magistrate. Joe Moran, who was the prosecutor of Alicia's unbelievably corrupt trial, he's now a Douglas County District Judge. And then Robert Ziegler, one of the individuals who snatched Troy Bonner in the Douglas County Courthouse, he's now an assistant U.S. attorney for the District of Nebraska. So you can see this. You can see this progression of upward mobility. The people in the court that helped participate in covering this up, whether they be in local law enforcement or federal law enforcement, were all bumped up the ladder. So that doesn't say a lot about our judicial system, unfortunately. Now, all this would be impossible to really understand. Why all of this? Why do you have federal judges? Why is CBS getting involved? Why hijack this poor girl's trial? I mean, what's going on? Why is all this power being used to protect some pedophiles in Omaha, Nebraska? After all, it's Omaha, Nebraska. I don't mean to offend anybody about Omaha, Nebraska, but we're just talking Omaha, Nebraska. What's going on? You know, why is the Department of Justice and the FBI getting involved in protecting pedophiles in Omaha, Nebraska? Well, they weren't protecting pedophiles in Omaha, Nebraska. They were protecting all pedophiles in Washington, D.C. And the Franklin scandal, I have five sources that corroborate Larry King and Craig Spence. He was a powerful Washington lobbyist and also a GOP power broker. And he lived in Washington, D.C. They were in the business of pedophilia, pandering, and blackmail. Spence was quite a power broker, and King would fly the kids in, and then the parties would go down at Spence's house. Now, Spence had a tremendous amount of power. Here's a Washington Times headline. Spence arranges midnight tours of the White House for male prostitutes. I mean, he had that kind of juice where he could arrange midnight tours of the White House with adult prostitutes and so. And his house was bugged for audiovisual blackmail, too. So any of the power brokers, and then there were a number of power brokers that went to his house that engaged in this, and also drugs. Anybody that did anything illicit in his house was blackmailed. And this is a Washington Times headline, power brokers serve drugs, sex, and parties bugged for blackmail. So ultimately, what you have here is a transcontinental pedophile network that is pandering children to the elite of the United States, both in the financial strata and also the political strata. And these people are blackmailed. And now Spence was a CIA asset. I've got a lot of corroboration on that. Not so much with King, but Spence was definitely a CIA asset. I mean, and there was also a grand jury in Washington, D.C. that looked into this and found that there was no child abuse. And the U.S. Attorney for Washington, D.C. Was also bumped up the judicial ladder and now he's the vice president at the Raytheon Corporation. So everybody that helped cover this up did very, very well. And unfortunately, scores of children. Scores. I mean, this pedophile network was in operation for 10 years. So scores of children were destroyed by these guys. And the cover-up is truly, truly sad. And I spent 7 years on this because I was skeptical about this going into it. But when I realized that it was a reality, I just said, you know, I've got to tell this story. I mean, people have to know about this story. And I think these type of networks are in operation right now in the United States. I've been investigating one out of Florida where I've got a tremendous amount of evidence. And they're covered up. What happened in Nebraska was kind of an aberration. These networks get covered up pretty quickly as soon as word comes out. And Nebraska was an aberration because you had a Senate subcommittee in Nebraska form and ultimately started looking into this. That's never happened where I've encountered these power broker pedophile networks. And you also had an amazing investigator named Gary Derrigory who had to pay for it. His life, but that was the payment he was willing to make. Some therapists had read my book, and I think that they had encountered these type of networks before. Therapists that work with dissociative disorder and trauma victims, they put together a book on dissociative disorder, Global Perspectives on Dissociative Disorder. And they asked me to contribute to it, and the theme of the book was on dissociative disorder. So I came across this essay paper by Frankl, who talked about Jewish ghettos, how they kind of fractured in Nazi occupation, and almost formed like altars, parts of the ghetto formed like altars. So I got to thinking, and I started thinking, well, you know, the Franklin scandal could kind of fit into that. It has certain analogs. You know, it's just kind of an example of societal dissociative identity disorder. So I started thinking and getting philosophical. So I'm going to get a little philosophical here, and if you don't understand me getting philosophical, I understand that, because I don't even understand myself when I get philosophical. So, okay, the Franklin scandal is analogs to DID. The Franklin scandal embodies the emergence of two competing and largely dissociated forces, federal and state authorities who are engaged in the cover-up of child abuse and the citizenry who seeks to protect abused children. Okay, many individuals with DID have personality states that can psychologically influence the larger society to be amnestic for their abuse or to deny their abuse in order to enhance their psychological survival. However, these initially helping personality states can turn to abuser-aligned intrapsychic entities over time, which ultimately become disruptive to the individual's psychological integrity. I got that from a paper from a couple of Turkish researchers. And we've seen abuser-aligned societal subgroups before. Churches, we've seen that. We've seen Boy Scouts. And recently we saw Penn State. That's kind of the latest example of an abuser-aligned societal sector. Now, sticking with my analogy on this, the Webb household and the Julie Waters report and disclosures represent the first documented disruption in the normal continuity of a society to protect its children from abuse. In other words, a nascent alter emergence here. With the web abuse, I mean, nobody really looked into it, but law enforcement was aware of it. Now the OPD started to generate reports, and this is a report from Shanetta Moore, one of the kids at Camp Ford. That's the veterinary camp was involved in child pornography, and the OPD was in effect omitting Moore's allegations of abuse from the collective memory of the largest society when it ignored her allegations. Now the next step is. When this altar becomes larger is when the Foster Care Review Board sends a letter to the state of Nebraska Attorney General. The inaction by Nebraska's Attorney General Office and the OPD with regard to Lawrence King-related child abuse created a larger chasm between the abuse disavowed and elder protecting the child molesters and the laws and mores of the society and body politic that seeks to protect children. So, at this point, this altar is growing, but it's just done through just ignoring the allegations. But then, after the foster care review board members testify in front of the Franklin Committee, and then these newspaper articles come out, what happens is previously the Nebraska Attorney General's office and the OPD simply ignored the child abuse allegations, but now these agencies were proactively engaging in deceit to cover up the abuse. And then the next step is Larry King is put into a mental institution. If King's hospitalization was a ruse to shield him from the grand juries, the abuse disavowing alter suppressing the child abuse evidence, evidence of child abuse, has now expanded to include the deceit and duplicity of two federal judges. So this alter, this societal alter that's protecting the child abusers, is getting bigger and bigger and bigger and coming to see more people. And with the Gary Caradore death, if Gary Caradore and his son were in fact murdered, it shows that the alter impeding the normal continuity of society from protecting its children from child abuse is willing to maintain the homeostasis that no Lawrence King related child abuse has occurred by murder. And then the media coverage, the once nascent alter protecting the child molesters has now included, has now expanded to include the local and the national media. So you've got the Department of Justice, the FBI, the Omaha Police Department, the Judiciary in Nebraska, you've got CBS, the New York Times, the Washington Post. They're all part of this alter now. And consequently, the abuse-aligned alter does triumph in this situation, unfortunately. The government and the media have completely disrupted the laws and mores of the body politic to protect its children in the case of Lawrence King-related child abuse. And are now functioning much like a powerful abuser-aligned alter within the larger sanctity of an individual with PID and then both disavow child abuse. So, what I think, I mean, I'm taking a liberty to go philosophical here, and I hope that somebody has understood me. I mean, I haven't really understood myself, but I think what has happened here is an alter has emerged in our society, that at least in this case, where it's protected these child molesters, and it's become larger and larger and larger as the grand jury, as the Franklin Committee gets going, as the grand juries get going, as the trial gets going, it has become larger and larger and larger to perpetuate this cover-up. And unfortunately, it makes the rest of the society amnestic for this abuse. And the Franklin scandal is on sale for $20. This is not philosophical, by the way. And in the immortal words of Mad Magazine's Alfred E. Newman, one of my childhood heroes, it's cheap. So I want to thank you very much. Sure. Hi.
Did this have anything to do with the Air Force Base there as well? Did it extend into the government Air Force Base? Can you hear the question?
She's asking me if this had anything to do with this STRATCOM, which is the kind of the brain of our national defense, which is outside of Omaha, Nebraska. Yes, I believe it does. I believe that there was, but I've only got one victim saying that at this point. So, but I do believe that it does, yes.
My history involves this, which is my dad uprooting his home in 1985, so I'm out from that place, and
then there's a tax survivor, so somehow. But it was with the Air Force. Yes, according to one victim, they are interconnected.
I heard Paul Benatti said to, I think it was Gosh, Johnny Gosh's mom.
Yes.
That he believed some of the kids in used in these rings were also being MKUltra mind control.
Paul Benatti claims to be a survivor of MKUltra mind control, and he is the one that came forward to me and told me that his program was done at STRATCOM. So, but the other victims I've talked to, and if you read the Franklin scale, I've talked to many victims. Most of them were pandered. There was ritual abuse involved, but Paul is the only one. that told me while I was writing the Franklin scandal that it was one other woman who's been on this involved.
Was there any investigation that
Boys Town said that it investigated generally. And Boys Town is kind of Boys Town is an incorporated city. Mm-hmm. It has its own police department. It has its own post office. Boys Town can cover up anything they want to cover up. And Boys Town, this is kind of interesting. Boys Town is highly litigious. Organization that looked into charities, and they downgraded Boys Town from an A charity to a B charity, and Boys Town litigated against them. So, but I've said that Boys Town was a pedophilic reservoir for Lawrence E. King, and I really searched very hard for Boys Town kids. They were the toughest ones to find because they were so marginalized and they didn't use social security numbers. They were very hard to find, like the crack house and the homeless shelter. And I mean, I had to go to great lengths to find Boys Town kids, but Boys Town won't litigate against me. I'd like them to litigate against me, but they're not willing to litigate against me. So, what can you do? Hi.
I wanted to ask. Well, first of all, if I'm not mistaken, Omaha World Herald is owned by Warren Buffett, right?
Not at that time. No. No.
It was the Washington Post.
The Washington Post was at that time. He owned a large segment of the Washington Post. And plus, the Omaha World Herald, which is very, very corrupt in this, owns ESNS, which is one of the software systems that accounts about half of the American ballots. So there's strains of Franklin that go all over the society. It's quite amazing.
Did your investigation
uncover
anything?
Did it involve Buffett family? I got all of Larry King's guests, or a lot of the parties that he threw. There's people in the Buffett family that are on his guest list. And actually, Warren Buffett, through his wife, gave money to King to get the Franklin Credit Union rolling. So, Warren Buffett, his fingerprints are on this, but not directly. Hi.
Hi. I was just wondering if there's anything comparable overseas, like this kind of thing going on, visiting European countries.
You've got to control.
They had a lot of bus. I'm curious because they had a lot of bus before, a couple years ago.
In Europe, you've got the Jimmy Savile scandal going on in the UK right now. Which is much like Franklin. You had the Mercure Tro scandal in Belgium, which is much like Franklin, except there, which was kind of interesting, there were people in law enforcement that actually came up and said it was a cover-up. And you had like about 50,000 Belgians hit the streets in protest. And there was another power broker pedophile network in Portugal that was uncovered. So they do exist, but because they're pandering children to the upper strata of society, like with Franklin scandal, there's a lot of effort put into covering them up. Because that would, if the dominoes in Nebraska would have fallen all the way to Washington, D.C., I don't think Americans would have reacted too favorably to their politicians being compromised by molesting children. I just think it would have been an issue that, it's very hard to outrage Americans, I think, but I think that this is an issue that would outrage Americans. So it had to be suppressed with grand juries, with the FBI, with homicides. And there's a lot of, in the Franklin scandal, in every chapter, there's two or three people that died very mysteriously. Hi. Working on a documentary about the Franklin scandal, but it's tough. It's very tough. It was very tough to get the Franklin scandal published. I was represented by the most prestigious literary agency in the world, or one of them, and I gave them the book, the proposal on the Franklin scandal, and like within 2 weeks, I was unceremoniously dumped as one of their clients. Magazine editors that used to talk to me really don't want to talk to me anymore. It was very difficult. There was one publisher in the country that would have published this book. And now I'm just finding the right person to make a documentary for it. But giving this, the thing is, this is a disease in our society. And the only way that you can get rid of a disease is first you have to diagnose it. And this disease hasn't been properly diagnosed in our society as of yet. And I'm thinking that the Franklin scandal can provide a window into the diagnosis of this disease, because it's very well corroborated, and it really shows just about every way that predators get kids, and just about every way that pedophile networks are covered up. So I think that the Franklin scandal is an important word in that respect. Mm-hmm. Hi.
You're being very brave. Are you at risk?
I've only had one overt death threat, but there's also been, I talk about it in the Franklin scandal. I was with Rusty Nelson. He said that he got into some trouble, and I said I'd pay his legal bills if he'd give me some blackmail pictures, and he kind of took me on a wild goose chase. I mean, Rusty isn't like a paragon of morality, so I wasn't expecting too much from him. But when I was driving him back to his place, I was pulled over, and for doing 70 miles an hour in a 65 mile, they just escorted me to a cruiser and ripped apart my car, and then there's been other things too. But I'm kind of obtuse, and I'm sure that a lot of them don't register with me. So that's the power of being obtuse. It's what I've got going against. I'm obtuse.
Yeah, time for one more question.
So I have I'm actually involved in a situation where I'm exposing trafficking, particularly of Native women, in the Duluth Superior area, and it's an international trafficking ring. So I would love to just chat with you for a couple of minutes if I could after this, but I have two specific questions. One, do you know anything about why he was taken to Rochester, Minnesota? Because I know that at one point there was someone involved with this in that first book that was released that ended up becoming sort of a power broker in Minnesota. Do you know anything about that? And then the other one is with the itinerary, the flight itineraries, where Larry King plus five. So somebody was working within the airline or something with that to make that
absolutely
happen.
Absolutely. Yeah, King corrupted the charters. And as far as Rochester, Minnesota is kind of like the PubMed of the federal psychiatric system, and Larry King was there, Jim Baker was there, Joey Iova, the head of the Chicago crime family, was there, and also Lyndon LaRouche was there. So ultimately, I think it was just a very cush place to deposit Larry. Well, the grand juries had to be corrupted, and witnesses had to be frightened, and so that was, I mean, they put him in the nicest of the federal psychiatric institutions. Because they were nice to Larry. Larry had been good to them, so they wanted to be good to Larry. Thank you very much.